So who's this guy, Eric, who won't take me so quickly and put me on a website? You need me to make a phone call, straighten this out right away? John, give this one to Clemenza. Sorry, I got a little brick on that. This talk's going right down the toilet. My name is Peter, I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
Okay, grateful to be alive and sober, part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to talk a little bit, see where God moves me on step 9. And I don't know how far we're going to get into that before we go into step 10. But God separated me from alcohol on June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And grateful to be a recovered member of this fellowship. And as a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a responsibility to uphold the traditions as well as the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous, to understand where our founding members come from and what it was like for them starting this fellowship up, and not take for granted Alcoholics Anonymous and treat it like as one of the many things I do, but the most important thing I do next to prayer. And bring dignity to AA and keep AA with integrity and treat it as such. It's really important for me when I say I'm a recovered drunk to be truthful about that, not use it as something to be unique or different from others. But as a recovered alcoholic, no longer suffering from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, to share with you how I got there and what I do to enhance that experience. To study our traditions, to understand the importance of traditions, how they not only keep Alcoholics Anonymous together. Is this okay?
Yeah.
It's like real awful from up here. Yeah, this is pretty bad. Okay. And can you hear me okay? I mean, if you can hear me, I'm cool. I guess it is. Is this okay? Yeah. All right. Okay. It's Eric's fault we have this problem. He's around here somewhere. I'm going to meet him. When I was first coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I always thought the traditions were for some of the older members or some of the secret, these people met in secret in the back. And my sponsors, my teachers quickly told me the importance of, as a recovered member, to understand the traditions and to study them and to learn about them. As a recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, how did I get there? What do I do to enhance that? And I need to be pointing to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to share how I got there. So anytime I get to do one of these things, this is really distracting. Okay, let's work out the sound before we go forward. Is that cool with you guys? Okay. It feels like there's six of me up here. One night James is not here, the meeting's gone to hell. I don't know. How's that now?
Still five better. No, still five.
Can you talk again?
You have to talk.
Let's go fix it.
Peter.
Uh-huh.
Talk.
Is this better?
No.
No? Okay.
Sound it a little better.
That was better.
Peter, can you talk so we can hear you? Then we'll know.
Now I don't know what to say. So I was flying home from Dauphin Island last night. And is this okay? I don't. Is that okay with you guys?
Okay. How's it sound to you?
Terrible, but as long as you guys can hear it, I'm okay. I was going somewhere with the importance of talking about recovered, and here's what I experienced. I guess that's why I'm being moved to do that. I was away this weekend giving a talk at some faraway remote place in somewhere in Alabama. And a lot of folks were kicking around the word recovered. And a lot of folks were really interested in the mechanics of the 12 steps. We're good, man. Leave it alone. Just... And In talking about being recovered, it seemed like they were trying to one-upsmanship on each other about this word recovered. And I've said this for a long time, and I say it to share to a newcomer how we don't have to be recovering. I don't want to be recovering anything, but recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body as a result of the big book in God. And I noticed a lot of folks throwing around the word recovered. And when I got to visit with them over coffee and lunch and things like that, and I watched them rock and roll in that chair and rattling all over the place and listening to 1,000 different voices in their head, there was nothing recovered about them. And so I had to question, why are they saying they're recovered when they're still in the process? Like maybe they just started their fourth step and they're claiming to be recovered, because it sounds like a neat thing to do. And I tell the men I sponsor, do not use that word unless you're really experiencing getting recovered, because with it comes a great responsibility. Because if I say I'm recovered, someone's going to listen to me, and then they're going to watch me, and I better be looking the part. And it's not a role-playing either. You're either there or you're not. And it's a huge responsibility, and part of being recovered is to knowing about our history and our traditions, not only where what we're about, but where we came from. And I watched some folks who were saying recovered. They were not recovered. They had a million things going on at once, and drink issues and drink signals and codependency and a whole lot of other things. And they were super attached to mechanics. I watched this one guy do a PowerPoint presentation on steps 1, 2, and 3. I felt like I was in a medical conference. And complicated God in step 1 to a point where I was getting a migraine and ADD symptoms. And that's not what this is about. It's not about outdoing each other's spirituality. It's not about, I have more knowledge than you. My big book is a little bit more precise than you. But it's about experiencing God and just sharing our experience with hope. Anything I've gotten, anything I have even tonight, anything I've been sharing is not from me. I mean, I speak about it, but it's been given to me as a result of getting me out of the way. And so it was a reminder for me this past weekend how important it is about the message we share. And be real careful about breaking traditions at this podium. There's a lot of other authors we can talk about, a lot of things we can share from this podium, but you'll be surprised how many folks get up here and take it as an opportunity to share anything we want at a podium, and that's just not what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. And I would challenge anyone on that, and we see it all the time, people sharing about things outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, which splinters and splits AA, and it's no longer a pure message. So I have a responsibility, we have a responsibility about that. And I noticed that this weekend, and I was sitting back saying, it's supposed to be AA, but it sounds like a medical conference and a lot of other things, but I'm wondering when AA is going to show up here. So with newcomers who are just getting around here, getting in this book, you don't need to be recovered at the beginning. You'll get there. You don't need to tell anyone you're recovered. Be recovered as a result of the 12 steps. And it's really important that we really get into our traditions and understand why we have traditions and how vital they are to Alcoholics Anonymous and to my own personal recovery, because they're 12 spiritual principles that I apply to my life. And when we have senior members in AA who don't know traditions, the newcomers follow them, and the blind leads the blind with both going in the ditch. And suddenly that meeting is not an AA meeting. It's just a meeting about a lot of things, but it isn't what AA is, which is very clear cut on what we're supposed to be talking about from a podium or from the floor. And I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago that I really enjoyed. And when I walked in, there was like 15 tradition violations going on. And when I spoke to someone about it, they got really annoyed with me for lovingly confronting them, on what's going on in this group. And the senior members were sound asleep to it. Now, I don't know what future that meeting's going to have. It's packed, but because a meeting is crowded, it doesn't mean it's an AA meeting. I'd rather be in a meeting with 15 who are on the board, who know about our traditions and our steps, and are talking about God, than to be in a meeting with 300 people, and it's a dating scene. And they're talking about everything but breaking traditions and violating AA left and right. And we can't talk about anything we want at AA. Otherwise, we wouldn't have traditions. One of the reasons why Bill put the traditions up is because he saw AA going sideways, and he needed to turn over the reins to us. So how are we doing with that? I'll get off my soapbox. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard people talking about making amends, it sounded like a really good thing to do to get back in the graces of people I knew I hurt, and that's not the purpose of amends. And I heard people talking about making amends, and I wanted to go quickly out and make amends. And one day I made amends without consulting my sponsor, and I had just started my fourth step. And I was working out in a gym, in a local neighborhood gym, and I saw a guy who I thought I hurt. And I'll tell you the story, it's almost off the charts, you're not going to believe me, but it was a police officer who gave me my first arrest. And I thought I was a spiritual guru that particular day working out. And I had just started my inventory, and I saw this policeman who really was ugly with me when he arrested me. But I went up to him and I said, "Do you remember me? And I need to make amends to you for breaking the law that day." Some nonsense like this. He said, "I don't know who you are, please stay away from me." That's a true story. And he was working out with guys who were bigger than this guy right here. They were monsters, and the three of them just looked at me like, "You want us to take care of this?" And I was appalled. I was shaking by that. And I went home and I called my sponsor and I told him what happened. And what he didn't tell me, I can't repeat from the podium. How dare I go do that with not even a fifth step under my belt? And my motive for going, and he made it clear to me, was to get a pat on the back and say, "Peter, you look great. I'm sorry for arresting you. Let's go for coffee." It was totally about me, and that's not why we're going to make amends. I'm going to make amends, our book is clear, because if I don't take care of this business, I'm going to drink again. But it's also about repairing the damage that I did. I need to be really clear on why I'm going to you and the approach, how I'm going to make it. Not only how vital it is to me, but I'm about to give you back something that I took from you, whether it's respect, dignity, money, whatever it might be. But it's about me trying to replace and repair, not just "I'm sorry," because we all have a million "I'm sorry" stories, and so do I. And when I went up to this police officer, I had no right doing that. Now, maybe 25 years later, if I saw him walk into a meeting and I could talk to him about that, about how I was a dope fiend and a drunk and you know, causing bad things and dealing drugs, and he arrested me, and I was really upset with that. Maybe I can make amends for breaking the law now. But not entering my fourth step. I had no business doing that. And the other reason why I had no business doing that, I didn't even consult anyone. Ninth step can be dangerous waters if we're not consulting people. We can do more harm when we have to go back and make amends for making amends. Here's another nightmare story. When we have a sponsor who's completely untreated and not in the big book, giving advice to new people on how to make amends, the blind leads the blind, the boat going in the ditch. And there's a true story. A guy I knew back in Staten Island was disloyal to his wife. He was sleeping around. And he sat with this sponsor. He says, "This thing is really bothering me, and they keep talking about amends. I think I should go tell my wife." Now, anyone would have said, "Let's go through the work, and let's see where we land before we go do something like that." And his sponsor says, "Oh, yeah, go tell her." They got divorced. And you know who suffered? The children. That's the importance of sitting with someone and seeking counsel with the sponsor. And any good sponsor who's on this path would say, "I don't have experience with this. Let me call my sponsor. Let me call someone who has experience with this. Let me seek counsel as a sponsor from someone else before we go out and do this." It's really important. Same thing with amends. We can maybe embezzle money from our company, or we can steal from other people, and there was three or four of us who were doing it, or maybe more than one doing it. And before I walk into the boss's office and say, "Hey, I've been stealing from you," I need to get an okay from the people I've been doing that with before I just walk in and say, "I've been stealing," and get them in trouble as well. And if they don't give me an okay to go do that, I don't go in. It's about putting pieces back in their place, not breaking it down some more. So we need to be really clear on what we're doing when we go out and make amends. And what's the reason why I'm going to make amends? Is it still all about me? And again, I know it's about me not drinking again, but that shouldn't be the only reason. By the time I get to step 9, it should be where I need to make this right. I don't know how. I don't know if I'll ever be able to make it right. But I need to make it right. And I can't have anything before me. And what I mean by that, I can't have, "Well, they're going to like me." I'm going to go, Matt, I hear this all the time. First, the men's guys want to make is to the ex-girlfriend. You're not looking to make amends. You want to continue the relationship. You're looking for a date. So don't go. If I'm looking to go back to a former employer to make amends because maybe he'll give me a job, that's something I'm putting before God, something I'm putting before amends. There's a great quote about being poor in spirit. I mean, I can't have anything before God, nothing. I need to be completely empty, and then I'll experience all of God. And when I'm experiencing all of God, because I have nothing before me, then I'm going to do God's work the way God intended it to be. But if I have stuff before me, like a motive, like an intention, like an angle, guess who's making the amends and for who? I'm making the amends, not God working through me, for my benefit. So am I poor in spirit all the time? When I am, I experience the kingdom of God, huh? But when I have stuff before God, all I'm doing is worshiping me. And how can I meet God if I am God? And we can say we pray to God. We can say we get on our knees and I pray to God. I'm doing God's work. All I'm really doing, and we see and hear a lot, is worshiping me. I'm God. It's all for my gratification that I'm going to make amends. So now I can feel good about me. And maybe I just harmed you in so doing. I need to be really careful with, say, old relationships. With women specifically. I don't go knock on Mary's door when she's married now and got on with her life and say, hi, remember me? Because I need to feel good in my belly that I took care of this thing and get another ninth step, a notch on my belt. That's not what the ninth step is about. In fact, in 8 and 9, they talk about any lengths. And there are going to be plenty of men that I can't make a direct approach to. Now, making the approach and the amends is two different things. Making the approach is me coming to you. Making the amends is fixing it. So we can make the approach, make the amends. There's many where I can't even make the approach because it's going to cause more harm in so doing. And what it comes down to, am I willing to go to this person? Am I willing to go to that guy? Am I willing to go to that former employee? Am I willing to go to that woman, yes or no? And if I'm doing well, that's a no. I'm willing to go. I'm going to risk my reputation. I'm going to risk my career. I'm going to risk a lot of things. I've gotten okay from everyone around me to go, so now I need to go. I'm willing to go. And that's really the test of, about making amends. And step 9 will say, you can't go or you need to go. So am I willing, yes or no? And if I'm not willing, I need to write more inventory, find out what's in the way, and continue to pray, even beg God for willingness to go complete this amends. Some of the most difficult ones we have to do may not be with the legal situation because there's real no emotional attachment to that. But some of the most difficult ones to make on an emotional level with the people who love us the most. When we go sit with mom and dad, you know, how do you sit with the parent that you've ripped off since you were maybe 14 or 15? Here you are 30 years old and you caused them nothing but heartache. And for years, you thought they had the problem. They didn't know how to communicate with me. It goes on and on and on. Yet, they live their lives, they're retired, doing great, and I'm in and out of jail and treatment. Something's wrong with my picture, not theirs. How do I go sit down with folks like this? How do I sit down with parents who paid maybe $100,000 to put me through treatment, and I'm still not getting it, and then I get it? How do I go sit down and say, how do I pay you back? Not only for the emotional support, but the financial support. How do I do it to a spouse I've been cheating on or have verbally or physically abused all my children when daddy was never there because I worship the drink rather than my own kids? How do we do this stuff? Well, God will bring us to it and through it, but I need to have me out of the way, and that's why 1 through 9 is so important, where we grind the ego into dust, self is out of the way, we start to have a relationship with God, and that relationship with God will allow me to sit down with you and look you eyeball to eyeball and make this right. And I'm not interested in what happens to me. In fact, if you throw me out of the office, that's okay. My ego's not in the way anymore. But if I go there with an intention and a motive and you throw me out of the office, I'm shaking like that police officer said, stay away from me. Because my ego just got bruised. There should be no ego here. This should be about fulfilling God's vision for me and for you. So where do I stand with amends? Why am I going to make amends? I think I may have asked this question before. Do we have outstanding amends tonight that we're currently aware of? that I could be making tonight, where I wouldn't be causing more harm in so doing. I have a list of amends that I'm currently aware of, I haven't made, and if I make them, I will not cause more harm in so doing. And I'm sitting in this meeting tonight instead of making the amends. And the reason why I'm sitting in the meeting tonight not making the amends is because I'll get to it tomorrow. It's not that important. It was a long time ago. Where am I going to find these people anyway? It's water under the bridge and goes on and on and on. Really. So what lengths am I willing to go to? Do I think completing my amends has anything to do with me drinking again or not? And if I think it has nothing to do with me drinking again or not, guess what? I have a step one problem, and I'm also God again. So I'm praying to go to any lengths. I'm praying to go to any lengths, but I have a bunch of amends I could be making, and I'm not. Aren't my words just words? I'm praying to go to any lengths. I got these amends, but I want to make them. I'm praying to go to any lengths so I can go to the meeting and sound really profound, but I got all these other amends I could be making. I'm not going. So my words are just words to God. Because he keeps telling me, psst, you got amends, psst, you got amends. And I keep saying, I'll do it tomorrow. I'm comfortable right now. I have a coffee commitment. I have to go make the coffee because the meeting will not survive if I don't make coffee, right? But I keep going out speaking because you're not supposed to say no. And I keep sponsoring people because that's what you're supposed to do. And what am I transmitting? How could I be present and mindful to this moment when I'm still driven by voices from the past? And if I have a lot of unfinished amends, I have voices from the past. The ego will tell me, no, it's no big deal. You're fine. Look at you. You're a star. But really, my state of consciousness is coming out of the past and how I hear, how I see, how I speak, and how I be. Because that stuff is not resolved. And we get that same person who now gets the benefits or the effect of completing all their amends. And then they say, oh my God, how did I stay in bondage for so long? We can stay in bondage for so long that it becomes status quo. You know, like a splinter in your finger. First it really hurts, and then 2 days later you kind of forget about it. There's still a splinter in your finger, and you still can't press it because it hurts. But you just kind of get on with it. That's how dogs and animals go through their day. They get a splinter, no one can take it out, and they just get used to it and hobble along. I thought we were a little past that. So then we start making amends through the guidance of a sponsor, and we really pass through the archway that step 10 talks about. We really enter the world of the Spirit, and then we look back on how much bondage we were really in. And the amends that I looked at, I said, I'm never going to be able to make this amends. This is really, really risky. It's going to be painful. It's going to be ugly. It was smooth. It was a seamless transition from where I was to where I went. And I go from the place I know to a place of the unknown. It's called the world of the Spirit, and that only can be experienced. My book tells me on page 77, my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. It has nothing to do with me. Here's what I've learned. The more of service to God I am, and the more I serve other people, I'm fine. My belly is full every day. I might be tired, even exhausted. I've been exhausted, but I'm full. I'm content. There's an inner peace. There's something still about me going in because there are no skeletons in the closet. I don't have to worry what I said or what I did to anyone because the slate's been made clean, even from the past. And most often, I'm very present. It isn't because I'm some super-duper AA member. I just did the work they asked me to do out of desperation. I didn't come in here and say, I'm going to do all the steps that you tell me to do because I want to get an A on the report card. I was just so sick and tired of being sick and tired and so desperate and twisted up. When you offered me something, I didn't know what was going to happen. I just followed directions. Like if you were drowning and someone threw a stick in the water and said, grab hold of it, I'm grabbing hold of it. I'm not going to say, I don't like the color of the boat. And are you an AA, by the way? I'm just grabbing on and following directions. And the benefits of following directions are the benefits of following directions. We get free. So my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people around me. So how do I go make amends? My book says, under no condition do I criticize such a person or argue. We might have to go make amends. We all have this, how to approach the man we hated will arise. Our book talks about that, man or woman. Right? And most of us have one of those. So how do I go sit down with someone that I really hated for the longest time? Well, if I'm hating them, I don't go make amends yet. I need to get past that and acquire a spirit of forgiveness, just a mustard seed of forgiveness before I go see them. And so off I go. And it's real easy for me to sit down and amends, and they start talking to me about more things that I did. And it's easy for me to say, yeah, but if you didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that. Or bring up the things they did. That is not the purpose of amends. I had this landlord who I despise. I always talk about this guy. And in part of the amends, I asked him, "What is anything you need to tell me?" And he could have read off a list of things that I probably missed. And if he did, my job is to be still and listen. It's probably their only and maybe first opportunity to express to me the damage I did. Because I might be clear on three or four things I harmed you with. They may have 25 or 30. I don't know. I don't know how much fear I brought to this guy's family, having a lunatic live downstairs while he had a wife, a daughter, and his wife was pregnant with another, and they had some drunken dope fiend renting out. I mean, I'm just thinking, if I was the landlord and I was living downstairs, I mean, that's pretty frightening. They needed to tell me that. So I don't argue with someone. I don't criticize them. My job is to fix this the best I can. Also tells me in step 10, and we apply this in step 9, their defects may be glaring, but chances are our own actions are partly responsible. So I'm going to the wife who's become codependent, untreated, Al-Anon, doesn't trust me, checking everything, checking my breath, checking my pockets for phone numbers, and I want to criticize that when, based on my life, what else do I expect her to do? So I sit down to make amends, and I can't bring any of that stuff up. I tell men when they go make amends to the girlfriend or the wife, and they tell me what a pain in the neck she's been, checking my cell phone, doing all this other stuff. I say, let me ask you something. If your wife was doing what you did to her, would you even still be in the relationship? No. So she gets a pass. You're the drunk. She's not. And the reason why she's so twisted up is because what you brought home year after year after year. So you practice love and tolerance. And now let God ooze through your pores home. And little by slowly, things will change if it's in God's will. And you take a little bit of heat. That's part of the amends. Part of our amends, by the way, especially in close relationships where we're going to be seeing these folks, is not to make amends and then I'm done, have a nice life. It's about living this. If I'm good friends with Joe and I stole from Joe when I was drinking, and I go back and make amends and give him his money back, well, I don't only don't steal anymore from Joe, but I try to befriend him and be the best friend God allows me to be. And when his heart is heavy, I need to catch it. It's about living this life. And if we're really in 10 and 11, I found you live this life. Right? On page 79, it says, reminding myself I decide to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. Here's the 9-step prayer. I ask that I, from God, for strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. I may lose my position or reputation. I may face jail, but I'm willing. I have to be. I must not shrink at anything. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save myself from the alcoholic pit. It's about compassion. It's about understanding. It's about forgiveness. My first time through the work, I did make over 200 direct face-to-face amends. And not because I was a bad alcoholic, I just hurt a lot of people. And my inventory was thorough, and I got the list mostly from my 4th step, and when I created the master 8th step list, there were a lot of people there. And when I set out embarked on this 9-step journey, over 200 face-to-face amends I made. A lot of them were longshoremen that I work with, besides family members and co-workers and things like that, and relationships that I had to get cleaned up. And I could go there without harming others. I had to make this right. There was one employer I couldn't go to because I would have implicated a lot of other people doing illegal things, but I suited up and showed up. And it's unbelievable. Some of these amends that felt so difficult on the way in turned out to be the easiest ones because God was orchestrating the whole thing and my intent was pure. I need to make this right to this man or woman. It got so tight for me that I felt like I couldn't even walk into an AA meeting without feeling like a fraud while I still had a bunch of amends that I could be making, and I was sitting down having a cup of tea while I still owed $500 out. And I couldn't buy myself a new pair of sneakers if I owed you $100 because I'm spending your money to buy my sneakers. I had to clean all of that up. And guess what? Little by slowly, things got cleaned up. I kept chopping wood and carrying water, knocked off and I was doing like drive-by amends at one time. It was incredible. Right? I was a longshoreman, and I borrowed a lot of money and never paid it back. And I dropped some names. I still don't know how I pulled this off. And I sat with people on the other side of the tracks who would give me money. And they wanted a little bit back each week until you paid back the whole amount. And I had the wrong people looking for me. And when it came time to make amends, I had to stand ready to make amends to all of these folks. And there was a diner, a little, they called it hole-in-the-wall diner, right across the street from the pier I worked. And the longshoremen and the truck drivers would all go in there 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, have coffee and have breakfast, shoot the breeze, and then get off to work. Now, I knew this. And I sat with my sponsor and said, how do I do this? He says, you take a bunch of money from your paycheck, and one by one, you go ask them for an appointment. And I stood outside the hole in the wall diner, and they would come out, and I would say, Joe, do you have a minute? And they would back up because they knew I was looking for money. He's at it again. And I would sit with them, and I said, I borrowed money from a long time ago, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't live like that anymore, and I need to pay back this money. And if it was 20 bucks, I'd probably give him 30 because 20 bucks is not worth the same anymore. I said, I need to make this right. Many of them said, you don't have to do that. By the way, you do look good. What's going on? And I would tell them how I'm living. And I would ask them, is there anything you need to tell me? What else can I do to make this right? The next one would come out and do the same thing. Next one would come out and do the same thing. And then word got around. Now, I will tell you, there were a few people who came up to me and said, hey, I heard you paid Joe back his money. You owe me money too, and I don't think I ever borrowed money from them. That's the environment I worked. You know what I did? I gave them the money anyway. It wasn't my job to start debating, yes, I did, no, I didn't. No, if you say I did, how do I know I wasn't a blackout? And I probably paid a lot more money out, but I'm still here 25 years later, and I sleep at night, huh? Well, here's what happens is the effect of amends. We make amends. I made amends in my financial life. My relationships got better. I made amends in personal relationships, and my work ethic got great. Things start to change. We make amends here. Things clear up there because we've entered the world of the spirit. And we go from what we know that's very tangible, what's in front of us, to the world of the spirit. And it's a whole other dimension of existence here. And our book talks about that. And we don't know until we get there. And suddenly that intuitive voice is speaking a lot louder and a lot clearer. We can hear it because we're clear. But if I still have amends from the past, it's not going to happen. Well, I start making amends to these men on the job. And over the years, this has happened every time I've gone through the work. And obviously, the amends the first time out were a lot more damaging than the amends maybe I make now, because I'm not hurting anyone anymore. But at the time I was out making amends, and word got around to my dad. And my dad was the shop steward. He was in charge of about 300-400 men. And my dad had this reputation where he worked, this impeccable reputation. And he suffered greatly because of my alcoholism. And I wanted to go back and make amends to my dad right away because I knew if it wasn't for him, I'd probably be dead. And so I need to make this right with my dad. And my sponsor, again, seeking counsel from a sponsor, said, no, not yet. You need to walk the walk. You need to prove this. He's heard your sorries forever. You need to step up, but you need to walk the walk. What you do speaks so loud, I can't hear a word you're saying. You need to do anything, just walk the walk. And one of the things I started to pay attention to was not trying to convince anyone, whether it was through an amends process or just practicing these principles, that I'm sober. I wasn't trying to convince anyone I go to AA. I wasn't trying to convince anyone I have this relationship with God. I said nothing, I just went to work. And somehow God speaks louder than anything I can come up with to prove to you that I walk with God or I'm sober or a member of AA. Little things like when payday would come, I still had money from last payday. Little things like I would see a couple of guys in a diner and pick up the tab for lunch for them. Little things like showing up for work an hour early and leaving an hour later like we do in AA, without anyone asking me. And as I started to make amends, that got around, and it got back to my dad, who was watching me walk to walk. I never forget one day my dad gave me a big wad of money. He said, "I want you to hold this." I still think till this day it was a test. He said, "I want you to hold this." He says, "Put it somewhere, put it in your account." He said, "I'm going to ask for it." He said, "I don't know when, but I'm going to ask for it." He gave me, it was probably a couple of $1,000. And so what I did, because I'm practicing these principles all my affairs, and I knew this was part of living this life, I put it in my checking account. And a few months passed by, and my dad says, "Remember that money I gave you? I need it. Can you get it for me?" And I think he held his breath. I said, "I'll be right back." I ran up to the bank, and I came back with that money. And then I think he breathed a sigh of relief, because I was practicing these principles. So when I showed up to my dad to make amends, I was walking the walk. Most folks don't want to hear a sermon, they want to see one. And a book talks about talking about God right off the top would be leading with the chin. We need to be really careful. There's been plenty of amends I've made where God didn't even come up. It didn't have to. And it didn't go with a script in front of me. I trusted my God enough to give me the words. And sometimes it was just, "Hey, I borrowed money off you." They took the money and said, "Okay, thanks," and walked away. As word got around, my dad started to hear about this, and a couple of guys came up to me and said, "You know, your dad is really proud. It's all he does is talk about it." He would never say anything to me, but he was telling his friends about what was going on with me for the first time. And little by slowly, my dad had a son back because of Alcoholics Anonymous and practicing these principles. And all the people I owed money, I paid back. And showing up for work on time was a regular routine, and leaving after work was a regular routine. I became dependable. Part of living this amends to the men I ripped off. And there was plenty of relationships I had to go back and repair, and plenty I could not go back and repair. And part of my indirect amends to women was to treat women with dignity and respect. That's why I have almost zero tolerance in AA for the 13-steppers and the predators. Because I'll call that person out in a whole room of people, I don't care. When a woman comes in and she's busted up and she's full of shame and remorse and guilt, I'll bring her to a Rachel, I'll bring her to a Marion, I'll bring her to a Laurie, bring her to a Michelle. There's a new girl, take care of her, and they'll step up to the plate. I'm done. Including outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's my amends to the universe and my amends to women and God. That's a responsibility I have. So I don't look over my shoulder anymore. I'm not tight. Any meeting I go into, I've been set free, and that's part of amends, getting it right. Getting it right. And not doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results because I'm sober 25 years, I can get away with some stuff. I'm not able to get away with anything because the road has narrowed. Right? And in the narrowing of the road, there's a tremendous amount of freedom. In the discipline that we do, there's a tremendous amount of freedom. It's a very narrow road to walk through the archway. And I'm not going to get it by wishful thinking. I need to get some blisters on my hand and get dirty, chop wood, and carry water. My book tells me the alcohol is like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. I'm a tornado roaring through your life. And most alcoholics like me expect you to clean up the mess after I'm done. I come home drunk, I get sick on the rug, I wake up the next morning and holler at my wife because she didn't clean up the rug. Right? Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Here it is. We feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety enough. How many meetings have we gone to where we say, I made amends, I'm sober, and that's amends to everyone, to my family. That's unthinking. That's narrow and selfish. And the book says just the opposite. It's about going back and repairing. And in the reparation, it says there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. Their defects may be glaring, but chances are our own actions are partly responsible. The spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. God will give me the power to go do that. We become the point people in our family. We become the elder statesman in our family when we're living this. And so in my family, I had two younger brothers that I ripped off. ripped off money, ripped off jewelry, embarrassed them, called shame and humiliation to them. Their friends would be hanging around at a bar, and they would just the guys hanging around, and their older brother would show up, and they would all want to run away because they knew I was capable of doing anything. And I went back and made amends to my brothers about this. In fact, I went back to them twice because more things were revealed to me and I had to clean this up. And they knew what I was doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, I'm really sorry, I failed as an older brother. It didn't start out that way, but I failed you as an older brother. I wasn't able to protect you. And I tried to pay them back some money. And I asked them, what could I do to make it right? And my brothers were just so grateful that their brother was back. But I stood ready to hear it. Well, one amends, my middle brother gave it to me. And I had to stand firm and take it. And it wasn't what I did to him. He was still angry and bitter as to what he saw me do to my dad. Dad would pace every night. Ambulance would drive by, thought it was you. Phone would ring 2 o'clock in the morning, my son is dead. And he'd curse and he'd holler and he'd argue and he'd take it out on us. My brother was livid about this. I need to make this right. So I get to practice these principles in all my affairs. Some of my amends I shared just a few weeks ago. One took 17 years because it was God's time. And one just happened recently. 40-year-old amends or something. I was about 18 or 19 or 20, whatever it was. And I made it within this last year. That's a long time. But that's how the ground had to get fertile for the right dots to get connected. And God said, go now. And it got right. It was made well. The power of amends. What happens when we start to clean up amends? We start to move into the world of the Spirit. We have some 9-step promises, by the way. And we talk about them in a lot of our meetings. But do we really experience them? Experientially, can I talk to you about the 9-step amends? 9-step promises? What that feels like? Or is it just words we read? I can't get it unless I've done the work and I've plowed the field. As I'm cleaning up amends, as we're cleaning up amends, we start to enter the world of the Spirit. We start to slide into step 10. And what that looks like is maybe I have 100 amends to make. And I'm making amends somewhere around 30 or 40 or 50 amends, even though I have a bunch more to go. But I'm actively seeking out people and institutions to make amends to. I enter the world of the Spirit. It doesn't mean I stop making amends. I keep continuing. Like mine, 17 years and a bunch of years after that, I continue to make amends and keep the slate clean. And great things happen when we enter the world of the Spirit. I'm just thinking of something. I didn't think I owed my mom any kind of amends. She died when I was 14. And she died by way of suicide. And she was one of us. And I guess it's because of the great teachers God put in my path. A gentleman, Joe H. from California, my sponsor, Mark H., were my babysitters. And something came to me in meditation. And I went to complete the instructions in this meditation. While I was going down to South Brooklyn, I was driving with Joe Hawk, and he said to me, do you think you need to make amends to your mom? And I said, absolutely not. I was 14 when she died, and you know, I was a little guy watching her drink herself to death. And what it was is I had to clear up some things with this woman, even though I couldn't see on the front end any harm I caused. And here was what I always talk about. We have this thing. We got that thing or things that are in us that are hurting us. If I could have done it different, if I would have, could have, should have, right? And there was a lot of that going on with my mom. And when we got down to Van Brunt and Walcott Street, Red Hook, Brooklyn, Joe showed me how I need to clear some things up with this woman who was long gone. And I did some praying and some walking around. And when I got to this spot where I watched my mom have a nervous breakdown, I was able to fix my past, fix that thing, reconcile it by telling her, I'm sorry that I couldn't do anything for you in your pain and suffering because I was a little guy. But I needed to tell her that. That came out of the practice of meditation and prayer in step 11 and actively seeking amends, looking to see who I can make amends to and having good teachers. And I was able to stand at a spot where my mom had what I now know is a nervous breakdown, put my hand on the wall, the same wall she was punching, and her hand was all bloodied up from punching this solid brick wall, put my hand on that wall, I could feel her hand, and tell her, I'm so sorry that I couldn't do anything for you. What can I do to make this right? And there was nothing I can do to make it right. But that peace, I communicated with her, that peace was done. And I drove away from there, changed forever. And once that peace was done, what happened to me just a few minutes later in that same experience flipped me around completely spiritually. When we get to step 11, I'll talk about that. Amends, be talking about amends, sharing amends story with each other. Because what happens is you shake it up to wake it up and you say, oh, I forgot all about this. I was on my way from Staten Island to Brooklyn for a meeting. There were about four of us in the car. We were talking about amends. And what came to me were two stories. When I was in the fifth grade, I borrowed books from the library. Never brought them back. So I went to the library, and they thought I was nuts. They said, we have no computers at the time. We don't know how to do this. I can make a donation. She was looking to call 911 while I was enforcing myself. What can I do about that? There was another amends I had to make. I remember going to my liquor store, and bought lots of Blackberry brandy there, and I asked for credit one time, and this Asian fellow wouldn't give me credit. I argued with him, and I cursed him out, and I used every ethnic slur I can think of, and I went outside and picked up a garbage pan and threw it against his window, and his family came out from the back, and they were terrified by me. I need to go back there, and I came out of talking about step 9. I need to go back there and make amends. I need to go back to my former employees. You know what happened to me as a result of making amends at work? For the longest time when I would walk in, I could feel the weight on me. There's Pete the Drunk, there's Pete the Drunk, Pete the Dauphin. That was my reputation. As I start to live this life and show up and leave on time and make amends and do all the things God asked me to do and AA asked me to do, I remember walking into work head up and shoulder squared, which is the way my dad taught me to walk, head up and shoulder squared. And when people would talk about some of my antics, whether they're joking around or throwing a little dagger at me, that had the spiritual airbag between me and them. Didn't mean anything. I was no longer attached to people's opinions of me. When people criticize me, I don't care what people think of me. And that came out of being present and getting my past cleared up. The power of amends. I go from a world I know to the world I don't know, the world of the spirit. And then suddenly things start to shift in step 10. And that's how we start to move towards getting recovered, because I'm no longer plagued by the voices of the past. That's all I got. Peace.